So you could turn to Nehemiah chapter 8, if you would. There's a phrase in here that we're all familiar with. Ezra, Nehemiah, sir. Nehemiah chapter 8. And one day, when I read this phrase, I asked myself, what does that really mean? So we'll get to it. Let's just start in chapter 8, verse 1. It says, and all the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street that was before the water gate, and they spoke to Ezra the scribe to bring the scroll of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded to Israel. And Ezra the priest brought the law before the congregation, both of men and women, and all that could hear with understanding, on the first day of the seventh month. And he read therein before the street that was before the water gate from morning till midday, before the men and the women, and those that could understand. And the ears of all the people were attentive unto the book of the law. You see, they added were attentive, but that's properly supplied by ellipsis. All the ears of all the people unto the book of the law. What, they weren't glued, they were attentive. So now we're going to skip down to verse 8. It says, so they read in the book and the law of God distinctly or clearly, and gave the sense and caused them to understand the reading. So they read it and they called them to understand, caused them to understand it. Verse 9, and Nehemiah, who is the Tirshatha, and Ezra the priest, the scribe, and the Levites that taught the people, said unto all the people, this day is holy unto the Lord your God. Mourn not, nor weep, for all the people wept when they heard the words of the law. Then he said unto them, go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweets, and portions to them for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy unto our Lord. Neither be ye sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. And that's the phrase that, you know, when I read that, I mean, we've all heard this countless times, just about, right? But then one time I asked, well, what does that mean? The joy of the Lord is your strength. Well, we're going to read a couple more verses here. So the Levites stilled all the people, saying, hold your peace, for the day is holy, neither be ye grieved. And all the people went their way to eat and to drink and to send portions and to make great mirth, because they had what?
Understood
the words that were declared unto them. And the words that were declared unto them was from the scroll of the law of Moses. And in that context, you know, it tells you in verse, well, it says in verse 3, everybody that could hear with understanding, the men and the women, everybody could hear with understanding. It tells you the same thing in verse 2 and in verse 3. Verse 8, it says they read it clearly, gave the sense, caused them to understand. Then verse 10 says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. And then verse 12 says, they went to make great mirth because they had understood the words that were declared unto them. So in the context there, it looks like the same thing like in Hebrews 12:2. It said, Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him, where the word joy was put for that which produced the joy. And that which produced the joy in Jesus was information that God had given Jesus access to. And here, the whole context of this is they were hearing the words of God, they were taught clearly, they were given the sense, and they were caused to understand. And then in verse 12, they made great mirth because they had understood. In that context, when it says the joy of the Lord is your strength, the joy in that context is the joy that they had access to information from God and they had understood it. And apparently they accepted that. They responded by acceptance of that information. That's what is, so literally the information from God which produced the joy, that's what was their strength. You know, it wasn't like they watched Looney Tunes on Saturday morning and that's what gave them joy and strength. Mm-hmm. It was information from God. Mm-hmm. If you look back at the book of Judges, we're just going to look at a few places right quick where people received information from God and see what happened. Judges chapter 7. And I think we're just going to pick it up in verse 9. You're familiar with this record. It's about Gideon. Verse 9, it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, to Gideon, get up, get down to the host, to the army, for I have delivered it into your hand. Verse 10, but if you're afraid to go down, go thou with Phurah your servant down to the army, So if you're afraid to go down, go down. the context, if you're afraid to go down with everybody, you know, to actually begin the attack, if you're afraid to begin the attack, then you and Fu are go down there, sneak down there to the outside of the army. Verse 11, and you shall hear what they say, and afterward shall your hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. So it says you're going to hear what they say, and afterward your hands will be strengthened. Doesn't mean his hands are going to grow extra muscles. You know, he's going to hear the words, and all of a sudden he's going to have a Hulk hand. You know, his hands being strengthened, his mind was going to be strengthened. That's what it means. He's going to be strengthened to do something. So then in the middle of verse 11, then he told God, no, that's okay, I'm not afraid. No, he didn't say that, did it? God said in verse 10, if you're afraid to go down, do this. And in the middle of verse 11, then went he down with Phur, his servant, unto the outside of the army, men that were in the host. So what does that tell you? If Gideon did what God told him to do, if you're afraid, then he did that thing. What does that tell you about Gideon?
He was afraid.
He was afraid. He said, I'm scared. You know, he wasn't trying to be dishonest with God. I'm trying to think of a politically correct way to say this. You know, he wasn't trying to be dishonest with God. Oh, no, I'm okay. I'm good. He said, I'm scared. All right, then do this. Take Phura. You and him go down there. All right, so he did. He was just honest. This is where I'm at. Okay, verse 12. Well, we're going to skip over verse 12. Just said there was a bunch of Midianites and Amalekites. Verse 13. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and look, lo, a cake of barley tumbled into the army of Midian and came unto a tent and smote it that it fell and overturned it that the tent lay along. Verse 14. And his fellow answered and said, this ain't nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. For into his hand has God delivered Midian and all the army. Now they're listening to this. You know, this guy dreams a dream. Here's Gideon Fuhrer. Listen to this. He says, oh, that's just those two guys outside the tent right there. That's what that is. I mean, they didn't know that they were there. But they're listening. Say, oh, my gosh. Verse 15, and it was so when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof that he worshipped and returned into the army of Israel and said, get up. For the Lord hath delivered, past tense, into your hand the army of Midian. So apparently that information that he heard did something inside of him, right? Because before he was afraid to go down with the army to begin the charge. After he heard that information, okay, everybody, get up. We're going down. We got this. You know, and God had told him, if you're scared, do this. Now you can say, well, these were Midianites. This guy dreamed a dream. This other guy interpreted. These are unbelievers. Book of Daniel has a few of those too. Mm-hmm. I think in Genesis 41, there's a guy named, with the title of Pharaoh or something like that. He had a dream or two. You know, so God is the one who told Gideon. So whatever is going on, God had his hands all over this thing. So the information which God gave Gideon access to had a real dynamic effect on his life. And that's just what God had told him in verse 11. You hear what they say, your hands are going to be strengthened. So that's what he said? That's what he said. Is that what happened?
Yep.
That's what happened. Look at 1 Samuel chapter, well, we'll start in 1 Samuel 14, just because it gives a little background on something we're going to look at next. 1 Samuel 14. Just going to look at a few verses. Verse 1 we'll read. It says, now it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said unto the young man that carried his armor, come, let's go over to the Philistines' garrison that's on the other side. But he told not his father. And you skip down to verse 6, and Jonathan said to the young man that bears his armor, come, let's go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. For there's no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. Now, something that we don't know yet, just from these two verses, is where did Jonathan get this idea from? You know, here's their army, there's the other army, and Jonathan's telling one guy, hey, you and me, let's go over there. There's a whole army over there. Is that really a very good idea? Right now, we don't really know. Where did he get this idea from? Verse 7, and his armor bearer said to him, I'm not really so sure it's a great idea, John. I mean, why don't you explain to me, you know, why you think that's a good idea? Is that what he said? No. His armor bearer said to him, do all that's in your heart. Turn to you, behold, I'm with you according to your heart. Huh, okay. Verse 8, then said Jonathan, behold, we'll pass over unto these men, and we'll discover ourselves unto them. If they say thus unto us, wait till we come to you, we're going to stand still in our place and won't go up to them. But, verse 10, if they say thus, come up to us, then we'll go up. For the Lord hath delivered, past tense, them into our hand, and this shall be a sign unto us. How could he possibly have known that? There's only one way he could possibly have known that. He had to have had information from God in order to know that. And that, it's going to explain something we're going to look at in a minute, but it also explains, well, you know that he had spirit from God, and you know that he operated what he had. That explains why in verse 1 he wanted to do what he wanted to do, and also explains why in verse 1 that he did not tell his father, because he had spirit from God and he was operating it. It also explains in verse 7 when his armor bearer said, I want you to explain to me why you think that's a good idea. He didn't say that. This in verse 10 explains verse 7. His armor bearer was aware of the fact that Jonathan had and operated the spirit from God. So even though it didn't look like a very good idea from the five senses, his armor bearer knew Jonathan. He said, hey, if that's what you say, I'm with you. Because he knew what Jonathan was operating. Now with that in mind, if you look at chapter 23 of 1 Samuel. So it just gave us a little bit of information about Jonathan. Now if you go to chapter 23, what verse are we going to look at? I guess we're just going to start at 15. Verse 15, and David saw that Saul was come to seek his life. He wasn't coming to seek his life so that he could, what can I do for you, David? And David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood. I wonder why he did that. That record in 1 Samuel 14 might help us to understand why Jonathan got up and went to David, particularly at this particular time. And why is it that Saul couldn't find David, but Jonathan knew where to find David? Chapter 14 helps out with that. Jonathan, Saul's son, arose, went to David into the wood, and strengthened his hand in God. And again, well, you know what? We'll read the next verse. And he said unto him, fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. That's a relief. Just that by itself would be a relief. Because if Saul finds David, what's Saul going to do to him? He's going to kill him. So John says, don't be afraid. My old man is not going to find you. Well, that's a relief already. Then he says, and you shall be king over Israel. Wow, that's sort of not startling information, because in 1 Samuel 16, 3 and 16, you can see that David already had access to that information as a ruddy kid. But he said, and you're going to be king in Israel, and I shall be next unto you. And that also Saul, my father, he knows this. There's a lot more learned. I shall be next unto you. That didn't happen. That's a great study in your own personal study. If you look at it, great to find out, well, why did that not come to pass? Right now, Jonathan is operating spirit from God. Other things came into play where that actually did not come to pass, even though it could have. So anyway, it says he strengthened his hand in God. And the way that he strengthened David's hand in God was that he gave David access to information from God. Or he perhaps reminded David of information that David already knew. He brought that back to his mind. And it was that information which gave him the strength. And that kind of fits with Nehemiah 8, where it says, the joy of the Lord is your strength. It just produces an effect inside of a person. Yeah, it gives them joy. It also gives them strength. Like with Jesus in Hebrews 12, who for the joy that was set before him endured just unbelievable stuff because of information that God had given him. Look at chapter 30 of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 30. We're just picking a few. I mean, there's gazillions of these things in the scriptures where people were in a tough spot And God gave them information. And wow, when they accepted and responded appropriately to that information, boy, the things that happened. I mean, we all know a lot of things in Scripture where that happened, where people, God gave them information, they responded appropriately, and wow, what happened? You know, it just, here's one in 1 Samuel chapter 30. In verse 6, it says, and David was very confident. You know, he was calm and quiet and peaceful. No, he was what?
Greatly distressed.
Greatly distressed. Not just distressed, he was greatly distressed. Why? Because the people were talking about stoning him. They weren't passing around joints. They were talking about, you know, killing him with stones. They were talking about stoning him. And then they, you know, because the soul of the people was grieved, every man for his sons, for his daughters. But David encouraged himself and the Lord his God. And that word encouraged is translated from the same Hebrew word. It was translated strengthened back there in 1 Samuel 23:16. David encouraged or strengthened himself and the Lord his God. He brought back information from God and said, okay. And then if you keep reading, he did other things. God gave him further information. David responded appropriately to that information. And the situation changed dramatically. If you look at 1 Kings chapter 19. You know what? You can turn there. You can keep, turn there, do what you want to do. In 1 Samuel, we're going to get to 1 Kings 19. 1 Samuel chapter 21, I think is kind of neat too. Thinking of David being greatly distressed. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's life sometimes. Sometimes things happen. And it's very difficult sometimes to put a smile on your face. And sometimes it seems like it's just not possible. 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 12 gives one of those situations. It says, and David laid up these words in his heart and was still very confident that nothing bad was going to happen. No, it says he was sore afraid of Achish, king of Gath. Verse 13, and he changed his behavior in front of them and pretended himself crazy in his hands and scratched on the doors of the gate, let the spittle fall down on his beard. Then said Achish unto his servants, look, you see this guy is nuts. Wherefore then have you brought him to me? Do I have need of madmen that you've brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Is this guy going to come into my house? And then if you keep reading, well, verse 1 of the next chapter, David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam, and other things continued to happen. David escaped by doing what he had done there in the previous verses. But prior to that, David was sore afraid. Now, realizing that David in chapter 16, what was it, verse 13, Samuel had anointed David. David had the Spirit from God. Gives you insight into why David pretended like he was nuts. Scratching on a door, spittles falling down. You know, you could think of today things today in our culture that people might do that would indicate that they're nuts. Well, that's what David did. So they'd get thrown out. Well, that's how he escaped. Where did David get the ideas to do those things? Realizing that he had Spirit from God could help us to understand that too. But he also had Spirit from God in verse 12 when he was sore afraid. So, you know, again, it's sometimes it just happens where you're in a spot where this is bad. You know, I'm not going to pretend it's bad. I can say it's not bad, but it is. It's bad. And, you know, it could end very, very badly and very quickly. You know, your life could be over with. I mean, we've probably all been in spots like that. If not spots where your life could be over, at least spots where something extremely bad could happen. And sometimes it has that effect on you, that you're scared out of your wits. Well, that's how David was. He was sore afraid. And yet, even in that situation, he was capable of receiving information from God and then accepting that information, responding how God told him to do, and that got him out of that situation, and things got better. In 1 Kings 19 is another situation, kind of similar in a way. We're just going to pick up 1 Kings 19. We'll pick up with verse 4. It says, but he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness without a servant. He left his servant someplace. He by himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, came and sat down under a juniper tree, and requested for himself that he might take a trip to the Bahamas.
No.
No, that he might what?
Die.
And he said, it's enough. I've had enough now, Lord. Take away my life. I'm not any better than my father's. That's kind of at a low ebb, would you think? I mean, if you're ready to die, and he wasn't BSing God here. He said, you know, I gave it everything I had. This is what happened. I'm finished. I'm done. I had enough. Verse 5, as he lay and slept under a juniper tree, behold, then an angel touched him and said unto him, arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was a cake baking on the coals and a cruse of water at his head. And he said, nope, I'm just going to lay down here. I'm going to keep laying here until I die. Is that what he said? No. And he did eat and drink and lay down again. So he did what the angel told him to do. All he wanted to do was just die in verse 4. Angel says, get up, eat and drink. So he did. Then he went back to sleep. Verse 7, and the angel Lord came again the second time. Touched him, said, get up and eat, because the journey. Wait, whoa, what journey? Journey? I'm coming here to sleep and die. Now you're talking about a journey. What's that all about? The journey is too great for you. And so he said, nope, I'm not going to get up. I'm just going to lay here. No, he got up. He arose and did eat and drink and went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights unto Horeb, the mount of God. A lot of interesting things there. One is, you'd think that, you know, God would send an angel and say, gee, Elijah, you know, I can relate. You know, man, I mean, this really is bad, the situation. I understand why you feel like you do. You know, if I was in your sandals, I'd probably feel like dying too. You know, is there anything I can do for you? Stuff like that. He said, get up, eat and drink. All right, so he ate and drank, he laid back down. Hey, get up, eat and drink again. The journey's too great for you. All right, so he ate and drank. And then it says he went to strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights. The word meat is just used for food a lot of times. You'll see where it says, God will say, the trees of the field are meat for you. Well, trees don't grow meat. They grow fruit or whatever. So the word meat a lot of times is just used for food. Now, it says he went in the strength of that meat 40 days and 40 nights. If you cross-reference that with John 4:34, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me, that kind of gets interesting, because the meat in that verse is talking about God's information. Here's what God wanted Jesus to do. Had Elijah received information from God in this record? Mm-hmm. He had. He got told to get up. He got up. Got told to eat. He ate. I don't think he told him to drink, but he did it anyway. There was a bottle of water, so he drank it. You know, and then he said, the journey's too great for you. So he took the journey. He did what God told him to do. Jesus said, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me. Elijah here is doing the will of what God is telling him right here. So the meat in this record certainly would include the food that he was given, but could also include the information that he was given, like John 4:34. Just, it's out there. Verse 9, and he came thither unto a cave and set up house there, and behold, the word of the Lord came unto him. Said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, murdered your prophets with the sword, and I only am left, and they're looking for my life to take it away. And he said, go forth and stand on the mount before the Lord, and behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains, or tore them, broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind, after the wind with an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake, and after the earthquake, a fire. The Lord wasn't in the fire. And after the fire, a calm, quiet voice. And it was so, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle, went out, stood in the entering into the cave, and behold, there came a voice unto him, said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, slain your prophets with the sword, and I only am left. And they're looking for my life to take it away. It's interesting. If they're looking for his life to take it away, if you read the first part of the chapter, Jezebel said, God's do so to me and more also, if I don't make your life like their life, I'll make you dead by tomorrow. Well, if he's looking to die, why didn't he just stay where he was? Jezebel's going to kill you. Just say, hey, I'm over here. Okay, chop your head off. Good. I got my wish. I'm dead. You know, part of what was involved here, he didn't want that, you know what, to have the privilege, to have the enjoyment of lopping his noggin off. You know, I want to die, but not from that fill in the blank. So, you know, verse 14, they're seeking my life to take it away. And the Lord said unto me, oh, gee, Elijah, I really get it, man. I know, I feel bad for you. You know, is there anything I can do to help you? No. The Lord said unto him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you come, anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. Jehu, the son of Nimshi, shall you anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah, shalt thou anoint to be prophet in your place. It shall come to pass. Oh, by the way, what's God given to Elijah here? He's given him assignments. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's not comforting him per se. He's given him assignments. You want to die? Here's what you want to die? Oh, really? What are you doing here, Elijah? Oh, and he tells him all these bad things happened. Okay, here's what you're going to do. You go to Syria. You anoint that guy to be king over Syria. You go anoint Jehu to be king over, you know, Israel. And you anoint that guy to be a prophet in your place. Is he going to be able to do that if he's dead? No. Probably not. You know, so he really felt like dying. But God gave him assignments. And you can read the record. We'll stop there in this record. God continued giving him more information. He told him, here's what's going to happen when you do this. And he also gave Elijah more information. There's 7,000 people who haven't yet bowed the knee to me. He kept giving Elijah information. And that information, he carried out what God gave him. And it had a strengthening effect. The word strengthen is not used except in verse 8. But you can see from reading it that it did have that effect on his life. It energized him, you could say. Well, close it in Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah 40 says, haven't you known, pardon me, haven't you heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, doesn't faint, neither is weary? There's no searching of his, what? Understanding.
Understanding.
Now, that's kind of interesting, because you'd think it would say energy, or power, or ability, or strength. The next verse talks about he gives power. Okay, now that's what you would expect to be contrasted to being weary or being faint. He gives power to the faint. To them that have no might, he increases strength. That's another one of those phrases that bugged me for years. Then they have no might, he increases strength. Well, by how much? You know, if I got no money, you know, I owe $10,000 this month to various things. I got no money, flat broke. If you give me a nickel, are you increasing my money? Yeah. Is that going to be anywhere near enough to take care of what I need? No. But you still increased it, right? So that's what really bothers me. He increases. They have no might at all. Like if somebody has no water, if you gave them one drop, would that increase the amount of water that they had? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would. So to say he increases strength, the guy is flat broke. Now you toss him a nickel. That just doesn't sound right, does it? You keep your finger here. Look at Exodus chapter 1. It's a great verse. Not that any verses are not, but relative to this, it's a great verse. Exodus chapter 1, in verse 7, says, and the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly and multiplied and grew exceeding mighty, and the land was filled with them. Five different phrases that God uses. That place was just overrun with Israelites. The word in verse 7, the word multiplied, is the same Hebrew word that's translated increased there in Isaiah 40, 29. Now, it's a good word in Exodus 1, 7, not good in Isaiah 40, 29. Because if you have zero of something, and then you multiply zero times a billion, how much do you have?
Zero.
So if they have no might, they have zero might, and he multiplies strength, you're still getting zero. So Exodus 1:7 is good. It shows he gives them strength to where they're just busting at the seams with it. They're overrun with strength. Those that have no might, they're just overrun with strength. That would be a better translation in verse 29. Verse 30, even the youths shall faint and be weary. The young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. You know, that being weary and faint, that's what we read in Hebrews 12:3, right? Consider him who endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your body.
Mind.
This verse 31 says, they that wait upon the Lord, it's like a waiter or a waitress waits upon a table. You know, the waiter doesn't go up to the table. There's three people sitting at the table. Waiter says, you're getting steak, you're getting chicken, you're getting a hamburger. You're going to eat it, and you're going to like it. Wouldn't go back to that restaurant too many times, right? No, they go to the table, they ask what they would like, and then they give them what they would like. Those that wait upon the Lord, they ask him, what would you like? And then they give him what he would like. And it says here that those that do that with the Lord shall renew their strength. They'll mount up with wings as eagles. They'll run and not be weary, and they'll walk and not faint. And that's kind of what we read about in some of those records, like with Gideon. You know, he was afraid, but he got strength. David encouraged himself. Jonathan strengthened David. You know, where they heard the words of God. They were waiting on the Lord, and then they did what the Lord wanted them to do. And then they were able to not be weary and not faint in their minds. So I thought that was great to look at, you know, what some of the benefits that information from God could produce in our lives. And I know that we've all experienced that, but I just thought it'd be good maybe to look at it again.